America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. Americans are making plans and making changes when it comes to their work. With a two-year pandemic scrambling ambitions and routine working habits, many of us saw it as an opportunity to reevaluate our work-life balance and to change direction in many cases, and even change industries. The Great Resignation, as it's been called, continues. Fully one half of Americans who quit their jobs last year made a career change. It's a fascinating trend, sure to affect you and your career. Let's take a look at what's happening today on America Trends.
With us on America Trends is an author, Kristen Schumann. She's got a new book called Jumpstart, How to Redirect a Career That Has Stalled, Lost Direction, or Reached a Crossroads. I should have met you many years ago, Kristen, because I think we all face that at one moment in our careers. But having said that, there are a lot of people in America today who are doing, well, something pretty provocative, and that is they're quitting their jobs. It's been called the Great Resignation. Or maybe take this job and shove it. What's going on out there?
Well, I know people want to ascribe it to maybe just one or two things, but I really think it's a convergence, maybe a perfect storm, if you will, of maybe seven different factors just coming into play. Obviously, COVID has been a catalyst for some of these things, but I've just really wondered if they've been like brewing for a while. People just, because I've been hearing in my practice as a career counselor that people were really wanting remote work well before COVID, and then, you know, as we approached COVID. And so to hear people say things in, you know, news reports that they want a 4-day week, or they want a 2-3 split of remote work to in-person work, in-office work, it is not shocking to me at all. I've been hearing that for you know, a few years now. I think it's sad. I think it's not, it's like wage stagnation. It's, I even wonder, this was a thought I had recently, if it's, you know, maybe some inheritance that people came into because of maybe, you know, elderly, you know, parents who had passed away because of COVID, you know, and maybe people don't have to. That's a very minor factor if it is, but that's one I've just kind of wondered about recently.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I haven't seen that proposed by any reports I've read, but that's just a personal anecdotal wonderment.
Well, I have read where there are a lot of folks who might have been approaching retirement who looked at the situation and said, it's too dangerous to go back in. I've got enough money. My home has surged in value. My retirement assets have grown. So why bother?
Right. And then they've not wanted to. If they're like 62 or older, say, which is like younger boomer, they're not, like, for instance, if they're teachers, they're not going to want to do online learning after years of being classroom teachers, being trained as classroom teachers, you know. I think they're kind of like, I'm out, you know. And that's not just be ageist and say that older people can't embrace technology. We all know the people that are older than us who are whizzes in technology, but I think overall, I think that's not a big desire of a younger boomer to work that way, especially the teacher, you know.
Well, there are also things at the beginning or the midpoint, if we know when the midpoint of the pandemic has been or is still, economists agreed that childcare challenges and worries about catching the virus were keeping people from returning to the labor market. Now, one thing that I would like to dispel is the notion that because everybody was getting extra help from the government, that that kept a lot of people out of the workforce. That has all gone away now. And we're still finding that in November, 4.5 million people quit their jobs. And that's a startling number, really.
Yeah, continuing to break records. And yeah, I don't want to pretend I have a crystal ball and that I see every trend coming, but I think it was September that a lot of those checks were going to end from the government. And I was telling people in July and August, I'm like, it's not like everyone's going to magically want to go back to work. This trend of quitting and resigning is going to continue, and it might even surge. So I haven't been surprised at all, and I think it's a feeble feeble reasoning that it's just that people are getting government money, and yeah, maybe that's a few people, but it doesn't explain this.
Exactly.
Really paradigm shift, really.
And let's be honest. I mean, baby boomers make up such a large part of the American population now, and their workforce participation numbers continue to go down. The one thing that I found interesting in researching this and preparing for our conversation today is that prime age workers, those who are about 25 to 44, they are in a much steeper track. I mean, they're still really well positioned in the workforce. Their rate is about 82.1%. And I think overall, the labor force participation rate is now down to 61.8% overall. So that group, but they're a smaller cohort than really when you look at the baby boomers.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. But they're a growing number. And what I think is interesting is that, like, my generation, which is Gen X, is like, I don't think there's ever been a point where we've been the majority of the workforce. This is kind of
funny. Right. Well, when you do look at where we are today, you, of course, counsel people as to what to do in their careers, whether they're thriving, whether they're stalled, whether, in fact, they want to change, whether they've recognized a new work, life balance as a result of the pandemic. What are people saying to you? Because the openings are now there as a result of the Great Resignation, people leaving for retirement. So what are the opportunities, and what do you tell people?
Well, I have a lot of people telling me, is not surprisingly, that if they've had to do in-person work maybe throughout the pandemic, or they're in a situation where they're having to go back to in-person work after having remote work during the most of the pandemic, which, let's not pretend we're out of it yet, because we aren't, but we're getting closer, I think. They're really, if an employer, say, is, this happened with a woman in South Carolina that I worked with. She was being made back in, I think, in September to go back into the office setting. And really, she really believed, and it seemed to be the case, that her work didn't require her to be in the office. She could really do her work as easily from home, and she just didn't feel like it was quite safe yet at that point. Mask, wearing wasn't imposed strictly and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'm hearing a lot of that. Like people are really wanting to either keep remote work, or if they didn't have the advantage of having remote work, they're wanting to kind of explore that possibility for themselves. That's a big one. And then I've worked with some people at some bigger companies that are based here in Portland, like Intel is an example. That's our biggest employer, our second biggest employer in Portland. I guess they have a lot of openings right now. Someone I worked with there recently is telling me that's really unusual for them to just have that many openings of like, they're just really scrambling to find people in all. It's a huge company. I mean, it's almost like a small town. This like kind of campus over in Beaverton that they have. That's quite unusual to hear that. We want to say like it's this sector, it's hospitality, but it's really, it seems to really be no industry seems to really be immune from it. Some are hit harder than others.
Well, definitely the frontline workers. I mean, there's no question that they have taken the brunt of it. I don't think we realized, Kristen, how many essential workers there are, and you see them, and a lot of them are young. They're minorities. They have been put right in the middle of this. They're delivering our goods. They're keeping our grocery stores open. They're doing really important tasks that I don't think we ever truly appreciated before.
Yeah, as a sister of somebody who manages a grocery store in the Midwest, I think you're right, and I think that we took, you know, food service for granted. You know, most of us have places that we're trying to support through takeout because we just really want them to survive, and some places didn't make it. You know, restaurant workers or retail. It's something that I think we took really, among many things, we took really for granted. I was just going to say, I was, I don't know if this was a nationwide thing, but I was just really disappointed in many ways, I feel like Oregon, the state I live in, managed the pandemic really well. We have a really good governor, I think, who managed things really well. People disagree with me. I think so, but I feel like when the vaccine first came out, frontline workers, restaurant staff, and retail workers were not prioritized. And I don't know if that's a nationwide thing, but I that did not make sense to me at all. But I just want to say that because I haven't seen that.
Yeah, they weren't. Yeah, right. They absolutely were not. And Governor Brown, I've read about her. Kristen Schumann is with us. She is the author of Jumpstart, and she is trying to help a lot of people jumpstart their careers. A lot of people got off track or purposely decided to move aside and go sideways for a while. And it's an ongoing she session. Kristen, that's what a lot of people mm-hmm. are saying, and I'm curious about your clientele and those with whom you speak. About 4.2 million women left the labor force during the first wave of the pandemic in 2020, and for many, their careers haven't recovered, seemingly. What are you finding in that regard?
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, it's something that I've just paid attention to, you know, most of my working life, that women tend to be the pillars of our society, like holding so many things up. And this pandemic really revealed that, revealed how much stress we put on women to, you know, to keep the home fires burning and keep, you know, schools or keep our kids in school and with having to do online learning, which is like a, you know, a special kind of hell for a lot of parents. I can speak directly about to that, you know, and I think what you, one trend I think is a more interesting one to think about is, maybe a factor to contributing to this great resignation is that you might have heard this too, that there's been a, an entrepreneurial boom. I would like to look closer at the data to see if that's a lot of those people are these mothers and sometimes fathers, right? That have, whoever bears the brunt of the childcare in their home for young children, finding, wow, I can't work at this place in person, so I'm going to focus more on the side hustle that I've always been wanting to, this business I started years ago, printing, I don't know, t-shirts or whatever it is, like online and selling them, that's actually a thing. I mean, the people are actually experiencing that. They're actually found that they were making, or I think the more common one is maybe doing like online teaching, becoming online teachers of yoga or whatever they were good at as a side hustle. And it's, I think that's a really interesting thing to look at, because I did a project when I was getting my MSW, my master's in social work, with another woman that we were very passionate about the fact that we didn't understand why so much of welfare and how we offer welfare in this, our culture, is focused on this 1950s model of, let's get you a suit and get you an office job. And it's like, so that we're going to take you away from your small children, which is most of who is on welfare, right? And make you go into an office so you're far away from your kids. And so we did this whole project and presentation on, why doesn't the government focus on getting people entrepreneurial skills so they can stay home with their kids and make a really good income? That's a thing. People can do that. It's not for everyone, obviously. Not everybody's entrepreneurial or has that spark, but many people are. And I'm curious to like find out more about that and see if that's really what's part of what's going on too.
Perhaps many people have found that they have more to themselves and in their lives, that they must redirect some of that energy into something that might have been almost unthinkable or unnecessary when things were kind of moving along as they had, and there were no interruptions, there were no consequences from a public health pandemic that affected, the ripple that it created. Speaking of ripples, there was a report from the American Psychological Association revealing that nearly a third of essential workers reported declines in their mental health, and a quarter were diagnosed with mental disorders since the beginning of the pandemic. Do you find a lot of people coming to you not only saying, I'm a little confused about what I want to do in my life, I don't really want to go back to that job, but they're also finding themselves really depleted in terms of mental exhaustion, maybe, again, a weariness that goes beyond the norm.
I've worked with three grocery store managers this year in the higher, like two of them were managers, the top, you know, level managers of the stores, and one was an assistant manager who was well on a track to become a manager. She was in a, you know, she'd been with the company for years, was really favored by, you know, really, really, you know, accomplished in her work and had, you know, been transferred from city to city to move up the chain, and so to speak. She thought that was going to be her path. And then the pandemic hit and she was like, she just didn't like some ways that the company itself was responding to the pandemic, right? And keeping, maybe not keeping people safe and that kind of thing. Seeing that.
Well, workers, among the first participants who did quit, again, getting back to the frontline workers. And I'm just curious whether any of these really resonate when you talk to people who are looking for a change. They cited low pay, heavy workloads, hazardous conditions, perhaps that's what you were referring to, and stressful, sometimes hostile interactions with the public. Now, we've seen what's been going on airlines, and I think that's being replicated in a lot of places. So many people are so pent up about all that's been going on. What do you most often hear?
It's mostly about the difficulty of the work, like work hazard situation, people being angry because they had to wear masks and being that person that has to tell them that, and being, people being, you know, verbally abusive to them. Managers or leadership, whoever that is, not always like having their back on that thing, like just kind of like bending to those, to that pressure of the public sometimes to, and we live in a city that actually is pretty good about wearing masks. So I tend to work with people in Portland. I do from time to time work with people out of state. To hear that it's like that bad here, it just makes me wonder what it's like in other parts of the country. Mm. So it's probably four times as worse.
Well, let me ask you, what about people who are quitting? Are they quitting without a backup plan often?
In a few cases, but they usually have somebody, you know, that they're married to that can kind of float them along, or maybe a parent helping them kind of get by so they can make a change. Most people, no. Most people are wanting to try to figure out a pivot while they're still working. And then that's kind of the way it's been even before the pandemic with the clients that I see. They oftentimes are going to at some point quit their job. And I almost feel like what I should put on my website sometimes is quitting coaching, because that can be its own thing, right? Because even as much as we want to, I just wrote a post about that recently, actually, but as much as we may want to quit a job, it's still a thing that we have to psychologically wrap our heads around to quit, especially if a job we've been to, you know, we've been there a long time and invested a lot of ourselves into it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to romanticize the fact that before the pandemic, I remember these studies about people not being very happy in their jobs. I talked to a Stanford professor who said that our jobs are killing us in many ways because we take them so seriously, we bring them home with us. And now, of course, you've got a lot of people working at home. So I know that men often can separate at the end of the day, but women, I mean, if they're working at home, often find that they go right from caregiving at the office to caregiving at home. There's no break whatsoever, so we can't romanticize that either.
Yeah, and I think that's true, and I actually think that there's some men that I would put in that situation too, because, you know, the younger generations of men are more interactive with their kids, and we live in a city that I think you see more of that too. You see more parent, like dads that are more hands-on, and I started my practice. One passion I had around it was wanting to help women re-enter the workforce after they've stayed home with kids for a few years, because that can feel really daunting, right? And then I found that, like, I had, you know, maybe not as many fathers, but I had a fair amount of fathers who came to me for that service, even though I marketed it to moms, right? So, yeah, I do think that is, you know, overall, though, I think it's more women that are dealing with that, because then they're the ones that are more likely. I have to admit and be full disclosure here. In my household, my husband is the one who's better at and really more involved with helping my kids with their school, mm-hmm. just because he has a better kind of mind for it. He's a lot more tactical in his thinking and that in the things that it requires, willing to kind of check the Canvas platform every day, that kind of thing. But I think we're unusual. I think in most cases it's women that are, and the moms that are more hands-on with that. And I just want to be honest.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this though, Kristen, because you're being honest throughout, I know. Fears about a resume gap. I mean, I know that when I was in the workforce, I'm a little bit older now, so I'm more independently employed, or I call it casual employment, like the podcast. There are fears over having this gap in your resume. And Anthony Klotz, who I think gave the name Recession,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying it's overblown, and that between jobs, it can be beneficial to workers and employers to see that you took a little time away, you stepped back, you analyzed it. So when you do go back in, you're really ready for the new situation.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I've actually coached people to kind of see it that way because it can be a mindset thing, right? I love that you said that because when I talk about, you know, this with folks that are wanting to re-enter the workforce, sometimes it's, you know, it's often kids that they've taken care of. Sometimes it's maybe a loved one who was passing away or sick mm-hmm. for a long time or something like that. But yeah, I tell people that too, that I have to be careful how I say it, but I'll say something like, you know, I know that this feels real to you, that this is a real barrier, that people are going to hold this against you. But trust me, a lot of this may be in your mind because I've gone on, you know, places like LinkedIn and a website that's very much like LinkedIn called Alignable. And I put out the question, you know, do HR folks hold this against people when they see a big gap in someone's resume, and especially if it's clear that it's been about caregiving or you know, taking care of kids? And overwhelmingly, HR people write back to me and say, like, comment on the question and say, no, that's not true. We're not going to hold that against people if they can show that they've done something to keep their skills up, that they've, you know, kind of just, they can explain the gap, that they won't, you know, again, that might be them idealizing their own reaction too, right? So I think I have to be kind of aware of that. But I really find when I am able to work with people, it's often a confidence thing, you know, it's their confidence. And then once we can get them clear about what they want to do next and how they want to position themselves and, you know, both explain the gap and explain how their previous skill, you know, and even the parenting or caregiving, because you do build skills in those things. Those are things that build skills. I try to
understand
too, that we can make a case for them and they can get a job. No problem.
By the way, I'm very glad that you mentioned LinkedIn and about the approach to walking away from a job. We're talking about all kinds of things related to jobs today on this podcast in the context of the Great Resignation. So you may be in the middle of various situations or at least thinking your way out of one into another. And there is this suggestion that if you are going to walk away, you do it in good standing, not by mm-hmm. Stamping out the door and
right.
Burning all the bridges behind you, that you keep your network going, that you have mm-hmm. specific goals for your hiatus. I mean, those things seem to be important, and that you stay in touch through LinkedIn and some of these other sites.
And I think that, you know, our parents told us, right, don't burn bridges, especially with people of authority. And it sounds kind of, you know, hokey, and but it's really true. I have so many examples of times when that's really paid off for people too, when they've kept those relationships in good standing, and not just to get good references and good recommendations on LinkedIn, but I have examples of people who actually were able to make a case for them, even if they got let go from a company, to make a case that they could go back as a contractor because they kept those relationships in good standing. And plus, it just makes you feel like this recent post that I wrote that's on my blog now is about, you know, I talk about that and how it's going to leave you with better confidence and a better feeling about things if you just kind of leave gracefully. And, you know, we love to watch those movies where somebody storms out and, you know, Jerry Maguire and the whole thing, you know, it's very
yeah.
fun to watch and fantasize about, but in reality, it doesn't always leave us with the best feelings.
What about the hold on strategy? I mean, do you talk to people who are just about to do something and yet they're a little reticent? They haven't really made the plunge. What about the hold on strategy until you have something?
There's something to be said for that, or having a plan. I like the idea of, I like the metaphor of the you know, the building yourself kind of a life raft, you know, mm-hmm. to get off a ship that might be heading or toward the Titanic for you, right, or toward the iceberg. At the same time, I'm going to contradict myself a little bit. There can be a lot to be said for a job that is really putting you in your lizard brain. By lizard brain, I mean just like you're kind of only in this kind of reactive mode where you're fight or flight or freeze is kind of it feels like your only reaction. And very often I'll talk to folks about that. Then that can make it harder to do this sort of higher level work, this introspective work, this kind of consideration work. I think it's Daniel Kahneman who wrote Thinking Fast and Slow, who talks about thinking like system one and system two, right? And this would be, I think it's system one thinking, where you have to do deeper thinking. You have to really, it's harder to do when you're just reacting. That might be where it might be beneficial to maybe, if not entirely quit, at least maybe cut back your hours or find a way to get your work to not encroach on your thinking so much. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The notion of being overworked or overwork, where Americans have so tied themselves and their identity to their work historically, and there seems to be just a little bit of a daylight or separation between the notion that my job defines me, and maybe it's because you've been forced to think differently about work since you're not there all the time. You're not really engrossed or enmeshed in a corporate culture because you've been pushed back into the home and you're starting mm-hmm. to think differently. Do you think there is that separation beginning to take place to some extent?
Oh, yeah. I think there's even data around that too, that people just, their priorities kind of shifted. They liked having the ability to maybe walk their dog during their lunch hour or something, you know, even if they were working furiously at home. There's more of a deeper connection with the home. I think that as Americans, we put a lot of our identity into our work, you know, and that's not such a bad thing that maybe we're rethinking that philosophy, because my dad worked for the same company his whole career, you know, mm-hmm. worked for the phone company and retired he wasn't even 50 when he retired and had a good run he still has a good retirement pension and health insurance like you wouldn't believe, he and my mom, and that I wish I could say to people, like, that's what you'll get if you work at most companies. It's like, no, you can't say that. It's not really here. Some people have it, you know. I have a friend who's about 50 who's going to retire as a firefighter. He's going to be fine. That's rare, though, you know.
Oh, we know that in America today. That's very rare. However, having said that, Kristen, when you look at it, what's going on out there, unions feel emboldened in a way that they haven't in the mm-hmm. recent period. Workers finally believe, from what I'm reading, that they have some real leverage that they haven't had in the recent period. Costco, McDonald's, Amazon, CVS, Bank of America, raising the starting or average pay for hourly workers. Do you think workers are starting to see themselves, when they're looking at 10 million job openings, that, hey, I've got some value and some leverage to negotiate?
Definitely, yes. And I think things like Glassdoor make that there's a transparency there that wasn't always there. And, you know, if companies aren't willing to post their salaries when they post job postings, people can look them up and see. Or if they're working somewhere, we're like, really, I should be making more money than I am now. Why am I not? They can compare. Yeah, I think those are all factors that influence people, and that, you know, we all feel a sense of loyalty to entities and to people who extend that same loyalty to us. But if workers aren't getting that from their employers, their employers can't expect to get that back. Mm. You know, my dad probably felt a sense of loyalty to the phone company because they gave him the equivalent of a college degree by the training that they gave him as an engineer. That, I'm not saying that never happens anymore, but it doesn't happen like it used to. And I think if companies could think about bringing that stuff back, then they're not going to be in a position to be like, why can't we find people? I don't understand. Why can't we, like, invest in your people and they will invest in you. Just like anything. It's reciprocal.
Yeah, workers are demanding a better deal. One other phrase that I want to throw at you to get your reaction, because you're right in the middle of all this, the great mismatch between job seekers' preferences and skill sets and what employers want, that, in fact, You know, you talk about Intel. Well, you've got to have a pretty good background in tech, I would imagine, to work at Intel. Do you think that we're preparing people for the jobs that are currently or will become available in the future?
Well, it depends on what you mean by we. I mean, I think that...
Well, the society overall, do we really understand the direction that our economy is headed in, and are we preparing people for that?
If I had to say, like, yes or no, I'd say no. I think it's complicated. I think that fair to say that our education system, and I'm not down on education by any stretch, but it's kind of prehistoric, arguably. I think it's not really... You know, like I'll give you an example. Like, if somebody came to me and they say, after we do some work together, that they think they want to get into tech writing, which can really pay well, especially in Portland. We can, you know, tech writers can do really well here. If they tell me, like, oh, I think I want to, you know, do this certificate program. I found it, you know, out of Chicago or whatever. And my first gut reaction is, and this isn't true with all trades or all industries, but with tech writing in particular, I'm going to say, yeah, I don't know if you need to do that, especially if you already have a four-year degree. I'm more likely to say, you know, maybe take a class in tech writing and talk to some tech writers, you know, see what skills and softwares you need to be up on and how you can kind of get into the profession that way. That's going to be a better path for you I guess I'm talking more about a pivot, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't always trust like academic institutions to keep people up on the latest and greatest trends and softwares. You know,
yeah, that's a great point.
There's exceptions to that, but I think that's a fair case to make. That said, I've got a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old or, you know, on the verge of possibly going to college soon, and when they say to me, well, I don't know if I need to go to college, there's that thing around like, well, right, but if you don't have a four-year college degree, there's just doors that aren't going to open for you. But I think that I wish that would kind of go away, this expectation that people have a four-year degree, because I almost wonder if that's, as we all think as a country, rethink our racist past, right? I think that's got to be rooted to some extent in these systems of oppression that want to keep certain people down, right? And if we really
want to privilege in the hands of the same group that
exactly.
had that privilege.
Yes.
According to you, a Microsoft's 2021 Work Trend Index, they're just up the road from you, 40% of people want to change their jobs this year. And yet, I'll quote another pretty famous company, McKinsey & Company. Their study estimates that major changes in the economy during the pandemic will force 17 million American workers to find new occupations. So it's not going to be optional for many people. They're going to have to move on whether they want to or not. So we've got a lot of people who want to move on. We've got a lot of people who are going to be forced to move on. So it clearly is a workplace and a workforce in flux.
It is. And I think that, you know, a lot of, like I said, at the beginning of the interview, when people want to ascribe it to one or two things, I just want to chuckle inside. I'm just like, it's so many factors coming together. I think age shifts, and you know, the boomers were probably already poised to, a lot of them, to retire. I mean, the only people in the workforce likely are, you know, younger boomers. Yeah, I think that there's going to be, when a lot of the talk, you know, when Trump was in office, I didn't want to talk about him, but I won't talk about him much, whether or not certain people were taking our jobs away, right? I remember talking to a woman I consider kind of a mentor of mine, a business coach in town, who she laid out for me how that fear was so unwarranted. As trends were going to happen that were coming our way, we were actually going to need more workers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we were going to need more young people, need more, you know, and that was actually, you know, it's just a misplaced fear. And yeah, I think that some of this stuff is just the way that the math works out, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And one of those mismatches is the fact that we are going to need these younger workers, and many of whom are not being born to American families today because the families are getting smaller. That in fact we are going to have to bring people in from outside, and we better get to it because we've lost almost 1 million people to the pandemic. We've lost so many people to resignation and to retirement. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's going to do all this work? So anyway,
right.
That's a whole nother issue. But Kristen Schumann, I want to thank you. She's a certified business coach, a member of the Forbes Coaching Council. She's written a new book called Jumpstart. And I thank you for being with us today and talking about all these really important trends here.
You're welcome.
On
America
Trends. That was
fun. Yeah. Great questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And best of luck to you. And
you too.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay.